Good evening. My name is Max Ramon. I'm with a group called Take Back the Land. We're based out of Miami, and I just want to spend a few moments talking about what we feel is a unique opportunity for social transformation here and how that relates to an opportunity to reclaim spaces which are not traditionally associated with working people or people of color. What we're talking about in terms of the opportunity speaks directly to a theory or theories about social transformation, how social transformation actually happens. And so the theory we're talking about is the one in which you have conflicts or contradictions in a society. And of course, these conflicts and contradictions are not new. They happen all the time and at various levels. But when these conflicts and contradictions happen in a society to such a level, to such an extent, that those conflicts or contradictions rise to the level of crisis, into a major crisis, and a crisis throughout the entire society, not just in one segment or not just regionally. During that crisis, there emerges a number of different ideas on how to resolve the crisis, and those ideas end up battling it out, end up fighting with each other. Those different segments of society, I'll talk about different ways of ending the crisis, addressing the crisis, dealing with the crisis, and that is a social clash, where those different elements of society, ideas in society, clash with one another about how to resolve this particular conflict. And during this clash, institutions in that society are overturned, institutions in that society are completely reworked, and then as a result, at the end, you have a completely new society, or at least a completely new segment of the society. So, for example, a society might find itself in crisis because not everyone in that society has health care, has access to health care, and as a result, so many people don't have access to health care and are losing their homes because they don't have access to health care and are dying early because they don't, that different ideas emerge about how to resolve this crisis. And some say that the way to do it is to keep patients from suing doctors. Others say the government has to have an insurance plan. Others say you have to reduce costs. And even others say that you have to have a single payer system that covers every single person in that society. And these ideas, these different segments of the society that are pushing these different ideas, have a clash with each other, fight it out. And at the end of the clash, for better or for worse, that particular segment of the society is overturned and operates in a different way than it did before the crisis, before the clash. So the society engages at time rigorous debate about how to resolve the crisis, and as a result of these debate, there's a social clash and then a transformation in the society, and that society changes forever. We think that there have been three major social clashes in the United States. We'll go into detail now because of limits of time. However, we believe that we are entering now into the fourth major social clash in U.S. history. And the fourth major social clash is fundamentally based on this economic crisis. And because this economic crisis is so tied to the housing crisis and to the land question, the clash ultimately will be about how to transform the society as it relates to land, as it relates to housing. Because this economic crisis is so rooted in the housing crisis, it's going to cause a series of ideas, a series of segments of society coming up with different ideas on how to resolve the crisis by addressing the land issue, by addressing the housing issue. As a result of this crisis, because of the scope of the crisis and the depth of the crisis, people in this country, for the first time in their lives, for the first time in a couple of generations in this country, are rethinking their relationships to different institutions and different phenomenons in this society. So at one point, it would have been very difficult for people to go and say that someone who owns a place has a right to keep the place empty, has a right to keep the place vacant, or has a right to do whatever they want. It would have been very difficult to argue against that in a broader social sense. However, because of the extent of this crisis, because of how bad this crisis is, people now are saying maybe this person should not be evicted from their home. Maybe this person should not be foreclosed on. They're rethinking their relationships to institutions in the society, including financial institutions, including the real estate market, including land and housing itself. More specifically, people are wondering aloud, what is the meaning of land? What is the meaning of housing in this society? And at what point is it okay to take a family who we otherwise sympathize with and move them out of the home? These questions are forcing people to rethink their relationships and are opening up an opportunity for the social justice movement to present a vision for what the future could be like, to articulate an alternative reality for this society, an alternative reality for this country, and to meaningfully struggle to achieve that reality. to engage in actual struggle in order to achieve that reality. In his great book, Wretched of the Earth, Francis Fanon says, every generation out of relative obscurity must identify its mission and then either fulfill that mission or betray it. I argue that in this time, the mission of the social justice movement, the mission indeed of this generation, is to elevate housing to the level of a human right in our lifetime. We think this is possible because of the economic crisis and because of the social justice movement is in a position to do this now because people are rethinking their relationships to land. However, because we have the opportunity to elevate housing to the level of a human right, doesn't mean we're necessarily going to achieve that objective because there still must be the social clash that we have to go through. And at the end of this clash, we can have either a significant turn in one direction where housing is elevated to the level of a human right, or we could have a significant turn in the exact opposite direction where corporations and wealthy individuals garner even greater control over land, greater control over housing, and greater control over individuals, over human beings. So we have to gain clarity about what some of the issues are at stake here. We have to gain clarity about what the crisis is, what the clash is, and what we want to appear, what we want to emerge, what we want to win after the social clash is over. So in order to do that, we need to distinguish between root issues and surface issues. Root issues are real, actual problems, the cause of a problem, the thing that's causing the problem in the first place, and the surface issue or the manifestation of the problem that we have to look at and deal with every day. If you are going to a fancy dinner party and you're all dressed up and your friends are all dressed up and you're going to the dinner party and people have fancy food out and you walk in and suddenly you realize that your nose is dripping, you have to get a napkin to prevent yourself from dripping all over your clothes and all over your friends and all over the nice fancy food that's out. So I'm certainly not arguing that you do not wipe your nose. But while you're doing that, you have to understand that you're dealing with your nose dripping by dabbing away at your nose. You need to understand that what you're doing is not dealing with the problem. While a drippy nose is problematic, the real problem is not that you have a drippy nose. The real problem is that you are sick and your sickness is causing the nose to drip. And if you don't understand the difference between the root issue or the cause of a problem and the surface issue or the manifestation of the problem, theoretically you could spend your entire life walking around dabbing at your nose and continue to drip because you won't take care of the root issue, which is your being sick. In the same way, in the 1950s and 60s, the larger society was able to say to the black community that you could only live in this area of town, you can't go anywhere else, you can't leave after dark, and you have to stay there. And this was called the Jim Crow laws, series of Jim Crow laws was called segregation. And there was a valiant struggle to end the laws of segregation, ended the laws, if not actually end the practice, and those laws were removed. That was a segregation in the 50s and 60s. And recently, during the housing boom in the 2000s, the black community said, this land that you're sitting on now is extremely valuable. We want to be on there. You have to get off there to make room for us to make lofts and condos, et cetera, so we can build on there and do other things, get off of the land. Objectively, there's no difference between someone saying to you, you have to live over there, and someone saying to you, you can't live over there, now you have to get out. That's because the real issue in the 1950s and 60s was not segregation, and the real issue recently was not gentrification. The real issue was land, and the fact that we didn't have control or any power over that land. And the reality is, the black community has no more control over land today than we did in the 1950s and 60s. And because we have no more control over today, we're forced to continue to battle the symptoms of the problem that we have no control over land. The symptoms of the problem that there's a small group of people who have control over land and are able, therefore, to do whatever it is that they want to do with it. So some people believe that if they change the Jim Crow laws, the segregation laws, it would make the air cleaner and the water fresher and change everything in life. But the reality was that was just a surface issue and you had to deal with it as such. So this opportunity that we have now in order to make real, to transform this society in a real functional way is an incredible opportunity. It's one that we're not going to have all the time, but we have to understand the real problem. The real problem is not high interest rates. The real problem is not putting no money down or too much money down for a home. The real problem is the land relationships in this society are fundamentally flawed, and until we address the land relationship issues, we're going to continue to deal with the manifestation of those land relationship issues. This also presents us with, I'll get that in a second. So we have now, with the coming social clash that we believe is happening, we have to rethink our relationship to a number of elements of society, a number of institutions in society. One thing we have to rethink is the idea of development. What is development? How does development work? What's the purpose of development? This society has proven its ability to develop things in a way no other society has been able to do in the history of the world. The beautiful buildings, tall buildings, well-designed, internet, high-speed internet, beautiful meeting spaces, the ability to develop things in this society has been unmatched in human history. And indeed, if development is fundamentally about things, then this society will go down as the greatest society in the history of the world. However, at the same time this society has been able to build these incredibly beautiful things, this society has more human beings in prison than any other country in the world. This is including countries with 3 and 4 times the population of this one. If development is fundamentally about things, then this society will go down as one of the greatest in the world. If development, however, is fundamentally about human beings and the ability to develop human beings and have human beings meet their potential, then this society will go down as one of the greatest failures in the history of the world because it has proven incapable of developing human beings in the same way that it's able to develop a small number of billionaires. In the same way, we have to rethink our relationship to development, we have to rethink our relationship to land and housing. Most people think that the fundamental purpose of housing is to make a home for an individual or for a family. In this society, however, the fundamental purpose of housing is to serve as a profit center for a corporation or for a speculator or other wealthy individuals who want to put money in one day and take money out of that item the next. This is at the root, I think, of this coming social clash. Is this competing idea of what the fundamental purpose of housing, the fundamental purpose of land, is or might be. What we would argue it can or should be. And so in the end, we have two rights or competing rights which are smashing up against each other right now. On the one side, we have the right of human beings to have housing, and on the other side, we have the right of corporations to make a profit. And these two rights seem to be increasingly mutually exclusive. If human beings have a right to housing, corporations cannot maximize their profit. If corporations are allowed to maximize their profit, human beings cannot have housing, particularly those human beings who can't afford it. So it's going to be up to the social justice movement to articulate what our position is, and this society and this generation is going to be judged on how we deal with, how we manage this social clash, how we ultimately resolve it. We assert that the right of human beings to housing supersedes the right of corporations to make a profit. And if we have to choose between a human being having a home and a corporation making profit, we will fall on the side of a human being having a home over and above the right of a corporation to make a profit. So we want to take this idea, this concept, and not leave it as an idea or concept, but actually put it into practice in a real fundamental way. So starting in October of 2006, Take Back the Land identified, on October 23rd, in fact, 2006, Take Back the Land identified a vacant lot in the Liberty City section of Miami. We seized that lot. We built a shanty town on that lot that became known as the Emoja Village Shanty Town. And we ourselves, without the help or without the permission of the government, housed 150 people in all, about 50 people at the time. We took control of land and we used the land for the things that it needed to be used for in order to advance our community. The Emoja Village stood for about 6 months, and then after that it fell to a suspicious fire. We think that the things that compelled us to create the Emoja Village in the first place, the material conditions that we were experiencing in our community, and the internal logic that we had, persisted even after the fire. Consequently, in October 2007, we began identifying vacant government-owned and foreclosed homes. We opened those homes up, and we moved homeless people into peopleless homes, and we do so without permission from the banks and without permission from the government. And we think this is important to do because we want to have control over our communities, and we think that the community needs to determine what happens to the land in our community, and our communities want people housed, not a bunch of banks that just got billions of dollars of bailout to keep vacant homes there. In order for the maximum amount of clarity, so we don't want to fight what the characterization has been, we've been called, said that our primary purpose has been to rehouse homeless people. Want to make clear, we don't consider ourselves a homeless organization per se. There are homeless organizations that exist that we take leadership from because they do specifically homeless organizations. We are a community organization, a black community organization in particular, and our mission in taking over land, including improved land, is to exercise the will, the public policy of our community directly. And we talk in terms of our community, we mean local black communities. And we think this idea of taking direct control over land and using it in the way that's seen fit by communities is the only way to move forward, and it's the only way to move forward when the powers of the government have clearly fallen to the side of enforcing the will and the interests of wealthier, of corporations and of wealthy individuals. Just very quickly, in terms of what some of the next steps are, which we've been asked to address, we think that we have a little bit of insight of this, with this because of the way the Emoji Village happened, when we built that village. When we built the Emoji Village, we housed people who were otherwise homeless. And when we did that, part of the process of doing that is we had the people who were there work on the homes that were being built. We built these shanties. We have pictures of them in the book. We brought a couple copies of the book. But we built wooden shanties. They were 48. Everyone got a 48 square foot place. They were duplexes. And people not only lived in them, but they were required to participate in the building and the maintenance of the area in which they lived in. And every Sunday, we had Sunday meetings, and during Sunday meetings, the residents of Emoji Village made decisions about how the Emoji Village was run, how the Emoji Village was operated. The residents made the laws, decided when the kitchen was open, when the kitchen was closed, decided how food and other things that were donated to us was distributed, decided who had to move, who got to come back in, and decided when to build more places and when to stop building more places, as well as the general functions, who had to take care of cleaning what days, who had to put out trash, et cetera, et cetera. So a significant part of rethinking these spaces is not only physically taking them over, which I think has to happen and needs to happen, and groups can help do that, but the use of those spaces or the management of those spaces has to also be fundamentally transformed, where the people who live there can say, we want to farm in this area, we want to do business in this area, and we want to provide housing in this area. The taking of spaces needs to happen in a physical sense, but the transformation of spaces can only happen by the people who are using those spaces, the people who are the benefactors, supposedly, of those spaces, playing a direct and integral role in determining how those spaces ultimately are used on a day-to-day basis. And short of that, we only have the replacement of one type of owner controller of land with a completely different and separate type of owner control, even if it is a more benevolent owner controller of land. It will be a different kind anyhow. The owners and the controllers, owners in quotes, of land must be those who are utilizing the space and who are working on the space. And there must be a symbiotic relationship between that land, the way that land is used, and the people who are using it and benefiting from it. Thank you.